Hello, everyone. My name is Luc Trudel, member of the LaRouche movement in Montreal. And tonight we have a special class that usually doesn't happen in the course of a development of a human being, because you'll see this. I want you to think as if you had just been plopped on this earth, and or you were just the new guy, the new human to be born into this place. What would you need to know about what is going on this place called Earth? And I mean, this is a standpoint that you have to put yourself in if you're going to really understand what is going on right now. And it can be quite confusing, especially if you're used, well, if you're not one of those guys who just came in, but are the other people you're gonna meet all around you on this planet. Everybody's been kind of used to living here, and maybe they don't even know what's going on. But that's the point of having this political briefing tonight, and it's also the point of why you have this really weird political movement organizing the population, provoking people to rethink what it is that we're living through right now. And so in this context, we're facing what for a long time was an impending crisis to come in the future. People like Lyndon LaRouche, you know, he's the leader and founder of this movement. And he was saying for a long time now, since the 1956 actually was his first forecast, that every policy taken by the United States government after Franklin Roosevelt disappearing from this planet or dying, you had measures. I mean, everything which was done, taken to change and make the economic system better or fix the system, ever since Franklin Roosevelt has died, has actually made things worse. And I'm saying that right now because it's going to be important to realize that if we are in this crisis, this argument that nobody knew that this crisis was coming, it's going to be it's going to be important to be able to just talk from the standpoint of knowing that this is not something we have to discuss, this issue. This is something which is beyond a doubt that there was people who knew that our policies were driving us towards this crisis. So now that we're in this, the greatest economic collapse the world's ever seen, and still, for that, might not be self-evident. But then, you have something unique in the universe in the fact that we have human beings here that are able to understand the principle, which is the understanding the invisible process of what an economy is all about, which is about the development of humanity. Now, within having said all that, you would think that because you're in a process of development of civilization, which is a civilization guided and organized by human beings, that one of the things that would be important was to keep human beings alive and not kill them, right? If you're going to organize society to have humans living together on the basis that you're going to make their lives, increase the quality of living of these lives by the fact that they are in a process where they get help from the social process which is created by the form of government. So this is can be generally vague assessment of what is an economy or what is humanity, but it's in the context of a present flank that we have in this movement, where we're saying that it doesn't matter how long you're president, because we're human beings, we can know what is your intention, what is it that you're defending as an idea. And if you're not defending the right idea, the people who recognize what is your agenda should be able to let you know, actually for your benefit. If you're the president of the United States right now, and you're assuming that you're in there trying to do something good, but nobody tells you that they see you driving your truck towards a brick wall, nobody's doing him a favor by not telling him the truth. But that's exactly what is going on right now, because Mr. Obama's agenda happens to be pushing towards a health care, and I emphasize health care, should be care, reform. Have you heard about this, you guys? Health care reform? Have you heard about Obama's... You might not have heard about it, actually, because up until recently, it was secret.
Wasn't he campaigning for that?
Yeah, he was campaigning for that, but how was he going to do that?
Yeah.
Actually, what did it sound like when he was campaigning?
He just said that I think he started off by saying that he would try to consult with other nations and see what other nations are doing with their healthcare system and try to patch things together.
Okay. So one of the things he might have picked up, huh?
Other nations like German Nazi.
Maybe, yeah. Maybe he was willing to travel through time and see what other nations were doing at different times.
Like he was talking to the Muslim world today in Cairo, I don't know if you're...
Yeah, that too.
But
that's not the point.
Yeah.
We're going to stick to talking about the healthcare reform, because one of the sources for Obama's consensus building qualities, he went to look outside in the world. It says, how is healthcare being organized today in this world? And one of the model exists in Britain, which is the NICE model. And it's not really nice. I don't know why they call it that.
Sick sense of humor.
Yeah, I mean, sick, yeah, because it's a healthcare, so it has to stay with the theme. Because the idea of the NICE, it's like an institute, National Institute for Health...
Care Excellence.
Something like that.
National Institute for Care Excellence.
Yeah.
Forget the health.
yeah. Get the health out of here.
Otherwise it'd be niche.
Niche. and then it'd be apparent that they were treating you like a dog, but then no.
Like a niche.
But the idea that they have this British model, and now Obama is going to be the talking head of an agenda, which is not really coming from him, because let's face it, Obama,
he's a nice guy.
He went to Harvard.
He's a nice guy.
Yeah, he's a nice guy. And the thing is, he campaigned to the American population that he was going to be a Franklin Roosevelt hero type of president. The type of president who gets America to rebuild the nation, get everybody to feel proud about what it is to be American, and we're going to change. We're going to change everything. But then you have to wonder what the definition of the word change in this case, when Obama is talking about what it means, because you could say, I am not George Bush, and therefore I've given you change. And the thing is, most people will not without a certain argument on their part, like they have a point in saying this, it's true that Bush was not good. But if that's the only standard for being a good president right now, any one of you could be president of the United States. Right? So that's probably not good enough. But I wanted to explain exactly what's going on without taking too much time, because we're going to have a class discussing the a very interesting facet of what it is that our human minds can do. And Matt will be talking to you about this a bit later on. And it's going to be hopefully able to demonstrate to you that a certain argument which exists right now as to why we're going to go with these reforms is because we can't afford to keep people alive. We have no means to keep everyone alive. This is just the axiom that you start out with. If you're going to be discussing politics right now and you're not in the LaRouche movement, the pressure and the tendency of the popular opinion is going to say, everybody knows that we cannot give health care to everybody. Therefore...
Nice.
Everybody knows that a lot of Americans are not getting any health care at all right now. So why not give them health care? Isn't that a good thing? We're going to give more people access to health care. Isn't that a good thing? So are we signing? Are you ready to sign the contract? We're agreed? Is that good enough?
How does it work?
Questions will be after our secret meetings.
After you read the small
parts. these are questions which are valid. But the security will take care of this guy, you know? So basically the idea of these reforms, which are not reforms, and you have to give it to Obama. He's one of the best at something. He is the best rhetorician. Obama went to Harvard and he did learn something. He learned how to talk in a certain way, which communicates ideas about what we all want.
Yes,
we can.
Nice. Yes, we can.
Yes. Anyways, the idea is that you can say these nice things, but the real people want to know how you're going to do it. And the reason why our movement could not straight out say that Obama was a fascist from the beginning, which would have been tempting, knowing that he was funded by George Soros and all this, and we were kind of saying that while he was campaigning. But then once he became president, he was saying all these things about Roosevelt. You wanted to give him the benefit of the doubt. You didn't want to just trip the guy, break his legs when he's not even given a chance to start what he's doing. And so
he did a few interesting things as well.
Yeah, he was like closing Guantanamo on the second day or something.
He shut out the Soros crowd for a number of months.
Exactly. Yeah, that's one of the things he did, which gave a good sign.
Good stuff, the Brits.
So
he kicked Churchill out of the White House.
That's true. He had this.
Right.
Yeah, this bust.
Now, like today, or he said that we need a two-state solution for the Middle East war.
Mm-hmm.
So he made it clear that and no more settlements. So he nails some point down, which are not along, which are not according to the fascist crowd.
Can you make a bit clearer, like the different factions in the administration, just so that people know?
Yeah, different factions.
Well, like the Middle East work is done by the Clinton building.
Oh,
and they have the behaviorism.
Exactly. Well, that's one thing. I mean, if we're gonna, I didn't plan on talking about that, but this would be interesting since you're bringing it up. You eventually had this campaign of the presidential candidacy with which you had Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, right? And Hillary had a lot of support. So when Hillary and Obama, they decided to make a deal where Hillary was going to give the way to Obama so that the Hillary supporters were going to have a place in the government of Obama. And you saw that all the good things that's been initiated in these finding a peace solution for the Middle East, all of this has been organized from the people from Clinton's crowd. And all of these people, they were the people that had been attending certain events that LaRouche PAC had organized in Washington. And so you had these guys who were incoming the new administration, which were collaborating, if you want, with LaRouche. Okay, so that's why the other idea why you couldn't really say that Obama was totally evil from the beginning. He had showed signs that he was going to consolidate all different views in his administration, and he was going to let people talk. But then what happened is that you had guys like Paul Volcker, you know, and he expressed the mentality of the Clinton crowd into addressing this idea of the economic crisis as first and foremost, and that you couldn't just bail out all the Wall Street bankers who were bankrupt at this point. And so, I don't know if.
yeah. Well, they were kind of like Volcker was pushed aside,
mm-hmm.
and the Clintons are doing some work. But really, what's governing the process on the internal affairs right now in the United States is really that crowd of behaviorist
mm-hmm.
economists,
mm-hmm.
basically taking like this British system of nice health, non-healthcare system into being,
yeah.
and categorizing like people who can get care, who cannot. If you're over 65, well then we know you're gonna die anyway soon.
Mm-hmm.
So why do you need healthcare anyway?
And that's, I mean,
cost effectiveness.
Yeah, because that gets at the idea of like the utilitarian philosophy. And this faction of like what we would call the Nazis in Obama's government, these guys, you know, they might be well intentioned in the sense that they're used to performing or they're used to doing things which are efficient. But all of this, you have to think, if you do all these things efficiently and utilitarianism, like things which are useful, but you forget what it means to have a human being, you're going to have a problem. And this is what that's what this movement represents in a sense, but this is what really all humanity they have this intention of still being human after the reform, you know what I mean? Is they don't have the intention of adapting their humanity to being dead. which would fit the model of the utilitarian. And the, one of the good warning that was given to United States on this question came from Dr. Leo Alexander. And he had he testified at the Nuremberg trials. I don't know. I think he testified.
Well, he was there.
Oh, was an aide. I think he was around these trials. And you might have seen the signs we had out in the streets, which said, you know, whatever atrocities it ended up being at the end, the whole thing came from a subtle shift in accepting that there is such a thing as human lives not worth living. This the whole euthanasia movement came from this idea. And if you let this idea pass through the guards without checking for their ID, you know, making sure that we know what we're letting in as policies, you can end up with a logic of thinking which can only lead you to concentration camps and mass elimination and genocides, right? Although not necessarily right away, albeit, you know. The idea that he made it clear that you do not necessarily have this change immediately, but that you have the idea that you had, sorry, I got lost here in the way, but you it's funny we're talking about healthcare. Okay, let's remind, and I just caught this thing which I didn't want to continue without introducing, because the original, this is taken from Dr. Leo Alexander's warning, because aside from his testimony at the Nuremberg trial, he did this paper which was published in the New England Journal of Medicine in 1949. And in this, there's a section at the end where he warns the United States that you guys might be heading in that direction. So watch out. You guys could end up being like the Hitler Germany Nazis. So it's not like the United States did not have their warning all the way from 1949. But in this, he brings the most important point, which these behaviorists do not even glance at this principle, that the original concept of medicine and nursing was not based on any rational or feasible likelihood that they could actually cure and restore, but rather on an essential maternal and religious idea. The Good Samaritan had no thought, nor did he actually care, whether he could restore working capacity. He was merely motivated by the compassion in alleviating suffering. And so this is the human quality which is unique to human beings, which no other species has. And there's no talk about the whole paper by Leo Alexander, or if you go to Hippocrates, which is the Greek doctor who created or wrote the medicine oath for every doctor to pledge allegiance to this oath. That medicine, you don't put the dollar first, and then if you have the dollar, we'll treat you as a human being. You know, is that funny?
Yeah, because they have no dollars.
I think it's funny. Yeah, I think it's funny. I find the idea of denying that idea, or the idea of taking the money first, I find that to be funny. Not in practice. In practice, it's horrifying. But the idea that you only got $5. Well, it's $6.25. I'm sorry. You're not gonna make it.
So we have this idea that either you're gonna have a government which is has the intention of giving care, or you have a government which has an intention of balancing the budget. You have a time like this crisis right now, where if sometimes it's not so clear that people are making these decisions on a day-to-day life, on a day-to-day basis, you have these moments where it becomes clear that everybody has to see the paradox or the problem clearly, and see that there's two ways to go about it. It's a judgment and a value in a sense. And so with that, and knowing what's being done in England with the British NICE model, and a complete silence because nobody knew that this was happening, these discussions of the of exactly the method that the reform was going to take shape in. And so at the yesterday's meeting, there was a presentation at the National Press Club on Tuesday, where the senator and Obama healthcare czar, Tom Daschle, was challenged by two members of our organization, writers for EIR, Executive Intelligence Review. And it's important to have, I'm thankful myself to know that there are some people out there that asked the questions that needed to be asked as the government was introducing this new reform. And Tom Daschle, I don't know if you remember, he was the guy who was supposed to be the health czar for Obama, but he had to be relieved because he hadn't paid his taxes, like Geithner and all the other guys. But there was a question by William Jones, Bill Jones of EIR, and he asked him if Obama's cutting health care to pay for bailouts of Wall Street was different from the motivation of Hitler's 1939 T4 order to eliminate useless eaters by withdrawing medical care from them. And so that was like, that created a total shift in the way that the people were attending this briefing, and there was a lot of giggles and stuff like that, and saying, wow, these guys are challenging them on being Nazis. But Obama is popular. Are these guys crazy?
Hitler was popular too.
Yeah.
What the hell?
So these guys, like Daschle, you know, as a good politician, he said, you know, your question is understandable, but we're not cutting, we're slowing the growth. But he gave away the game by claiming a growing awareness among Americans of the large amount of unnecessary medical care being delivered. And so the idea that a lot of people right now are going to claim that there's too much
healthcare.
Well, in some cases, they're going to claim the argument that some healthcare being administered is like useless or like unnecessary or redundant or things like that. But what LaRouche came back, or what we're saying right now, is that what is really the problem is that you have the HMO system, which is the health maintenance organizations, which were created in the 1970s, 1973, which put a new bureaucracy in between the role of the government and the administration of care at the hospital level, let's say. So now you had these guys who were recruited from the insurance and financier sector, okay, which were now operating as private companies, managing the expense of healthcare and establishing lists of procedures which would be paid for and some which would not be. And this is all part of the reform today. It's not to do what would be the natural impulse of anybody who's noticed what the HMOs did to the healthcare in the United States, which is basically taking 30% of costs or fees and wasting it on administration, which is basically there to decide how we're not going to give you care.
How much goes for actual care?
Well, the 30% figure is what we've estimated that would be
the insurance costs.
The you have the insurance making 14-18% profit, and the rest is the cost of administration.
And so, how much for the actual healthcare? How much? What percentage?
Well, before the HMO, like it was usually like for the like just the management of care under the Hill-Burton was approximately 2% of the cost of healthcare. Like would go for overhead.
Oh, would go for overhead.
Yeah, only 2%, not 30%.
I see. Mm-hmm.
And
so the rest is the actual.
Yeah, I mean,
I was mistaken.
You're going to cut care by 30% by introducing the HMO system. So by removing the HMO system, you have 30% more care given to people because the cost which would go into this siphon mechanism doesn't go there. It goes to people. And that's the whole point of these reforms, is to give the impression that you're going to extend the care of this HMO system to more people. But what it is, you're actually going to operate with a chopped down budget by close to, I don't know, $600 to $1 trillion. I don't know exactly the amounts. I've heard different things.
To cut?
Yeah.
No, I thought it was two.
More.
It was $2 trillion.
So imagine, you have a program, a federally...
$2 trillion cutting in healthcare.
And then
$2 trillion bailout?
Yeah, exactly.
$13
trillion. You have to ask yourself where the money being cut is really going to, and where your priority is if you're Barack Obama, you have this bankers claiming for money, but you also have your whole population which wants to stay alive, and they're not getting the money for healthcare. They're being denied. They're getting the budget of healthcare chopped off. So where's the priority? And I mean, there's two kinds of ways you can be fascist. I mean, you have the Hitler did, you know, he was kind of like a ruthless, vain person. Then you have like Obama, which we don't see necessarily as an evil guy. Most of us don't think of him as an evil guy without knowing what we're just been discussing. But then you have also what's being done in California, which can serve as a kind of idea that this is really real fascism in the United States, because you have these people who put Schwarzenegger in head of California as an experimentation to show that you can have these guys profiled. Like in this case of Schwarzenegger, his father was a Nazi, and these guys will say, well, this guy is going to be able, when it comes down to it, and he has to decide between the general welfare and paying back the bankers, paying the debt. This guy, Schwarzenegger, has a stomach for that kind of stuff. He can go and say what I'm going to say. I'm going to quote him, actually. He says, I know the consequences of these cuts are not just dollars. I see the faces behind these dollars. I see the children whose teacher will be laid off. I see the Alzheimer's patients losing some of their in-home support services. I see firefighters and police officers who will lose their jobs. People come up to me all the time pleading, Governor, Governor, please don't cut my program.
I'll be back.
They tell me how the cuts will affect them and their loved ones. I see the pain in their eyes and I hear the fear in their voice. It's an awful feeling. But we have no choice. Our wallet is empty. Our bank is closed. Our credit is dried up. And so he says we have no choice. That's the leader. that you, that the California people have right now. And so if you don't have the money, well, just get used to dying and just do it quietly. So is it really true that he has no choice? What else could happen right now? In this situation, I mean, this actually it opens up a whole new subject, but basically the whole idea of creation of money is not even mentioned. The idea of reinvestigating what is the system of money, which has just been bankrupting the whole nation, is not even questioned. It just takes things as a fait accompli. But that's how these popular propagandized insanities get people to do irrational things and actually do what was done in Germany. So if you don't have any people in this context who are willing to challenge these people, I mean, you're stuck in a logic which doesn't really offer you a solution. But I mean, going back to what he said, you know, his wallet is empty. Well, we're getting conflicting messages here, because at the end of the Bush years, Bush says the economy is all no problems, you know, the fundamentals are strong. Recently, Obama's been saying how we have no more money. So do you have money or do you not have money? And if you have the money for the Wall Street bailouts, how come you don't have it for healthcare? So what's going on here? And so people should think about that. And I'm probably going to let Matt start soon. But the idea is going to be that there is a movement in place into what we're doing right now, whose job it is to recruit people to this reality. Not only to this reality that this is a fucked up mess, pardon mon français, mais this also the idea that you can be part of a process where the human qualities emerge. The human qualities of creativity, even as simple as asking the right question, in this case is of what these briefings, where you have these people just saying the truth or asking what everybody's thinking. Isn't this going to be exactly the same kind of logic that the Nazis used? Are you committed to that? And if you're in your side of your heart, you're like my mom, just trying to make Obama, you're so sure of your feeling that Obama's a good guy, then why not help Obama realize that he's becoming a stupid fascist? Because you want him to do the right thing. You're doing it because you like the guy, not because you hate him. You want to be able to tell Hitler not to end up suicidal at the end of his life. Because you like Hitler.
I don't know.
Before he does all these things, you might see him as a human being.
Okay.
And before Obama ends up having not...
Well, it's interesting, that idea, because, you know, it makes you kind of sick to think of thinking that you may have liked Hitler, you know. But, you know, Hitler is dead. And his memory his personality in our memory is what it is, based on his choices. He made himself into what he is. He may have been fooled into it. He may have been created to a certain extent, profiled and pushed that way. But he's an evil, evil personality in history. That's his immortality in that sense.
But with the idea of the tragic figure as well, you know that it's never just the tragic guy, in this case Hitler, who's the sole responsible of all evil, and then all the other people who were around at that time get off scot-free, and then, wow, my grandfather was perfect, and because he was not Hitler, you know? But what about all the other people, like bankers in England, who was founding Hitler, or Prescott Bush, the grandfather of the President Bush, who was founding, giving money to Hitler? What about all the population which got fooled into this thing? You got to have some kind of responsibility.
Some kind of Adolf middle name.
I mean, if you don't take responsibility for that, and if we're not, if right now we're just going to say that Obama is the sole tragic figure who gets to do the right thing or not, and that we get to watch the show, then there's a problem there too, because that's a lie. I know a lot of people who have who are able to speak. I know a lot of people who are able to think. But can they think and speak at the right time and speak and say the things at the right people when it, well, it's important, where it can make a difference? Can we put all these things together at the right time and with the right idea? Or just basically always commit to saying things which are truthful? And if we say what we know and we find out we don't know much, maybe we can commit to finding out more. And with this, I think Matt can talk to us about... Yeah, maybe we can take some questions later on. I mean, did you have any present question?
Well, I was just going to say that what we want is to go back to a Hilbertian kind of management of the healthcare system.
What you want is Obama to get rid of the Nazis in his government. Because the people like Peter Orszag and all these behaviorists we've identified, who are giving him the cues in the economy, because Obama, he's not an economist, he doesn't claim to be, but he's still listening to them, okay? And these guys are saying, actually, if you go back to their days in university, when they were just college lads, you know, innocent young people getting drunk on the weekend, they were writing papers on how euthanasia was a good way to get the government to save a few bucks. And if those people, those disgusting and morally repugnant, or I guess morally repugnant, or people would end up being the people that are advising this supposedly good guy, who are probably thinking he's a good guy because he's probably a good judge of character. Well, he's not. We got to tell him he's listening to a bunch of Nazis. That's clear. So that's what he should do. These guys, Larry Summers and all them, if Obama shows that he's serious and he doesn't want to be called a Nazi, I don't want to be called a Nazi. Stop it. Well, stop being a fascist, you stupid fascist. Don't be a fascist. We won't call you a fascist. It's simple like that. So that's it.
Get that? We're talking a lot about the Nazi problem. Today on the MSN home webpage, there was an article about Paul Menkev, the book that Peter wrote, was a good model of good gestion. Right now in India,
Mein Kampf, the book. The book was a good management model.
Right now in India, they're selling the book like thousands of that book, and students from India buy that book because it is for them. They consider it like a good management book. They consider that Hitler had an objective and he did success to attain it. So today it was an article like stupid usual article you get like old radio baby and stuff like that. It was an article on the MSF home webpage. I was pretty surprised that they're all talking. Menkev is selling a thousand of copy around the world and especially in India.
Maybe they lack toilet paper. You know?
can you get do you do you have the, you guys have that link, or did you send the link to anyone?
I should, but
you should, because
if you
look
right now, today, MSM on webpage, you have that article.
We'll get it after the class, everyone.
Yeah. I checked that this morning.
Your bedtime reading.